Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
During the season, and his impact was there. Even heard Mike Tomlin say you could see the Dean Pease influence in the defense before the playoff game a couple of weeks ago. But Dean Pease, as we heard John Harbaugh say, at 75 years old, might want to walk it back a little bit. And I'm kind of retired, like to kind of be that way. I'll still help if need be. So the news broke last night. Coming out of the Ravens camp, their website, Chuck Pagano, who had been in retirement for 4 years, as a matter of fact, since he left the Colts, who was head coach there after he left Baltimore as defensive coordinator in 2011. He's going to be the senior DB coach. And it was a big picture of Chuck Pagano. Remember when he overcame the cancer?
Yep.
And he came back and he led the charge, and that was the year, unfortunately, the Ravens lose to New England in the AFC Championship game, but still that defense was good. They lived and died by him. Haloti Ngata, because I remember talking to all of Haloti Ngata, Ed Reed, Ray Lewis. They were all team Suggs. They were team Pagano. Then he goes to the Colts, and as fate would have it, his first year as head coach in Indianapolis, they play the Ravens in the wild card round of the playoffs. It was Andrew Luck's rookie year. But he overcame a life-threatening illness and then decided, hey, I'm going to live in the good old graces of happy, retired, got some cake, everything's chill, still love football. We see him on Pat McAfee all the time. But Chuck Pagano, coming out of retirement, to join the Ravens coaching staff. Now, if Dean Pease is taking a step back and senior defensive back coach, I don't even know what that means, to be honest with you.
Title.
Yeah. Does he become more of a sounding board or, say, an advisor to Zach Orr? Because
I don't think
Zach was here as a player when Pagano was a coordinator.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not.
They just missed each other, I believe.
Yeah, I think what Pagano's job will be just kind of taking over for Dean Pease. Make sure that all the T's are crossed and I's are dotted, because he knows, you know, I mean, we go back to, you know, the basis for the defense. He knows it. Keep them on track. And Bob, what position struggled the most last year?
As DBs.
Yeah. You know, and you had a new DB coach, Mallory, who had never coached in the NFL before. So that's not easy. Chris Hewitt's back there, too, because whenever I'm out there, Chris Hewitt's doing the drills. So what does that mean, you know, for Chris Hewitt? I don't know. But Pagano will... he'll be a big sounding board, I guess, I'm guessing, for Zach Orr. You know, just because you had Dean Pease, you know, he was a coordinator here. All right, so I bring in Pagano, and he knows the defense, and maybe he's got a little different intricacies that he can put in, study the defense. And the nice part about him being here right now, Bob, is Dean Pease didn't come into week five. So, I mean, you're making changes on the run. Now he's got a chance to install some things and keep educating and growing Zach Orr. And who knows, Bob, if Zach Orr, you know, because it seems like they're putting a lot of time and money into, like, developing Zach Orr. And who knows if Zach Orr isn't 3 years from, or whenever Harbs were to retire, that maybe Zach Orr is that guy. You know, he's only 32, 31.
We're looking that far ahead?
Well, you know.
I mean, Harbsy is in his 60s now, you know.
And he's probably getting a new 3-year deal.
Harbsy.
Probably, yeah, new three-year deal. Bob, how about me and Pagano, we go back. He's from Boulder, Colorado. And Scott Lockwood, I don't know if you remember him. He was running back at USC. I was recruiting Scott Lockwood, and Pagano's dad was the head coach. So that's when I met him. And they would have a camp in the summer. So they invited me to the camp because I was recruiting the kids. So I've known the Paganos since that was probably, what, about 86? Something like that?
Yeah, I don't know Scott Lockwood, but, USC running back. That means he had some skills, no doubt about it, based on their lineage. But getting him out of retirement. So I don't know the answer, and I don't know if this will even be a press conference-worthy addition. Who knows? And I'm not saying it shouldn't be, but do the Ravens call him? Does he contact them? Hey, John, you know, sitting on my ass. I need to get something rolling here. You know what I mean? Or they go, hey, come on in. Let's solidify some things because we have some young dudes we really want to take to new levels here.
If I'm a betting man, Bob, they probably called him before Dean Pease, my guess. And maybe he had stuff going on or whatever, and then they moved to Dean Pease. I would think that he was probably kind of always on. He was on the list, whether he was the first call or the second call back then. But I'm guaranteeing because they won former Ravens. And it would be Dean Pease, Pagano, and Rex. Rex would not probably mesh because Rex would want to take it all over and beat a face. And, you know, Rex wouldn't be a good.
And if memory serves, I don't think he and John Harbaugh separated on the greatest of terms. I don't think they're adversaries by any stretch.
Him and Wink didn't they separated on not great terms.
Right. But, you know, Rex went to the Jets, got the head coaching job there. But, you know, and he obviously didn't get the Jets job. That went to Aaron Glenn. But, I mean, who knows? I mean, now you need a new inside linebacker coach.
Yeah.
I mean, what avenue do you travel down there to replace after we talked about it yesterday, Vinny, and Nolan McGraw, of course, Woman Crush Wednesday, Bob Haney with you, that Trenton Simpson took a colossal step backwards this year in season.
No doubt.
No less.
No doubt. And the guy that coached him the year before was Zach Orr. That was his position coach. And he seemed like, because in that Pittsburgh game, he got, because he was awful at rookie minicamp. I mean, he looked like he was clueless, had no idea. And he gradually got a little bit better. I thought in that Pittsburgh game his rookie year, they aided his development there because all they did was blitz him and they took out all thinking for him, which made him look good in that game. Now, when he came back, he looked much better. But as you said, Bob, he regressed big time where they didn't want to give him a snap anymore. So, yeah. So I would think, Bob, they got to get whoever the linebacker coach is going to be because you got Zach Orr, your coordinator, and he's a linebacker guy. You got to get a guy who's a great teacher. That's what I would think. You got to get a great teacher in there.
It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. What's happening, everybody? Woman Crush Wednesday. Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato, Nolan McGraw on the other side of the glass coming up tonight. 7 o'clock tip. Maryland taking on number 17, Wisconsin. Terps winning 3 in a row. 2 of those on the road at Illinois. And then that dramatic win against Indiana this past Sunday. Wisconsin's won 8 of their last 9 games. And the only loss was at UCLA. A couple weeks back where they lost by 2 on the road. UCLA, by the way, starting to play really good basketball. Terps are favorite in this game. Ken Palm, and as Kevin Willard told us last week, oh, yes, he follows that, has Maryland favorite in 8 of their last 10 games, including tonight. And we'll talk about that. But your anticipation level for the game, but also Maryland right now, Joe Lunardi, for instance, has Maryland as a 7th seed. Mike DeCourcy, who's going to be on the show on Friday for Fox Sports and Sporting News, he's got Maryland as a 7th seed. Jerry Palm, a little more skeptical. He's got Maryland as a 10th seed, who we had on last week. So the Terps, what bottom line is, they're starting to put together a lock resume for March Madness. However, sitting at 5th place and with a favorable schedule, how about getting into the top 4? of the Big Ten tournament where you get that bye.
Yep.
The double bye through the first couple of days. And then you're really strong, maybe level up from a 7 to a 5 and good things like that. Because we haven't seen Maryland do that sort of thing in quite some time. Going back to what? I don't know, the Diamond Stone, Mello Trimble year. They were a 4 seed, made the Sweet 16. Even the 19, Bruno Fernando, Jalen Smith, they lost in the second round of LSU. They were kind of a lower seed, I think a 7, if I'm not mistaken. The 2020 team probably would have been a top 4 seed. But this, you know, Gary Williams used to get criticized for only getting these. This hasn't happened in a long time. Not seen it's going to. And we'll talk to Damon Evans, bottom of the hour. But Kevin Willard and his crew, they positioned themselves nicely to set up for a pretty strong. There's some, believe it or not, everybody, there's 10 games left in the season.
And when Coach Willard joined us yesterday, he mentioned the schedule. You know, they ran the gauntlet a couple weeks ago. They had 3 games in like 7 days and been playing on the road a lot. And he said, yeah, that hurts you now when your team's still growing and developing. But the other side of the coin is down the stretch in the most crucial games, a majority of those are going to be in College Park, which is a huge boost for Maryland. And they'll have a little more space in between games, more times to practice, more time to rest, to get ready.
So you're starting to feel a little March madness creeping in at the end of January. Get in if you can at 410-583-1057. Of course, the Super Bowl is set, Super Bowl 59. Kansas City and Buffalo, a couple of Ravens tapped out of the Pro Bowl. We'll talk about their replacements as well. Feel free to get in. Damon Evans, bottom of the hour. It's Woman Crush Wednesday. It's Vinny Hedy Nolan here on the Fan. 17th ranked in the country, one of the hottest teams in the land right now, more offensively capable than they've been in previous years. And we'll talk about that with Damon, and we'll break that down as well as the show progresses. Orioles just a little less than 3 weeks away from pitchers and catchers. Adam Jones, he rejoins the nest as an advisor to Mike Elias. Talked a lot about Sagano because he played against him when they were in Japan. And he'll be part, of course, of the Orioles rotation this year. 1 year, $13 million deal. If you missed it yesterday, now we talked about Austin Hayes by the end of the show. 1 year, $5 million with the Cincinnati Reds. But Adam Frazier went back to Pittsburgh on a 1 year deal, about $1.5 million. And look, Adam Frazier, was he Robbie Alomar or Bobby Grich or Brian Roberts, anybody like that in Orioles lore? No. Davey Johnson. But his 1 year here, he was a pretty integral part.
Yes, he was.
Of a team that won over 100 games. And he was an all-star in a previous career track with the Pirates, kind of playing out the string. But he was at Kansas City last year, so he tends to go places where teams tend to win. Now, the Pirates, they've been on the downward slope for quite some time. It's funny, though, because we were talking last week, at their fan fest, the fans were yelling, sell the team. the owner won there, but still, hey, get rid of this team and let us move on to like more success, because they have some really good players, young players at that. But either way, two ex-Orioles finding new homes. The current day Orioles are still expected to be contenders in the American League. And I think this is getting lost in this whole, we haven't signed anybody to a bazillion-dollar contract. Because everyone's running hot over, well, David Rubenstein said we're going to expand payroll. And they're going to have to eventually. Like in big dollar terms. Not give Tyler O'Neill $60 million. By the way, 3 years, $60 million for a guy that was on the IL 3 times last year is big money. But sooner or later, they're going to have to compete. They're not going to nobody competes with the Dodgers anymore. Not even the Yankees. No mas. And the Red Sox, we're good. Nobody goes to that level of spending with all this tons of deferred money. But the Orioles are still good. And you need a lot of one-year deals. If you actually look at the roster, and a lot of still young star players in their primes, couple of years away from getting paid. And we'll talk about that with Mike Exesa. So, Orioles have made some interesting moves. Dylan Carlson a piece. Heston Kerstad, we talked about this yesterday with Danielle Allen-Tuck. I mean, why is he still competing? Isn't it time for him to ascend to star status like Adley and Gunner did pretty much out of the get-go? Same with Westberg. Kerstad's had a rougher go of it. He had myocarditis, which is a heart issue, which cost him basically 2 years. Then he got hurt with a hammy. Then he got beaten in the brain last year against the Yankees. But I'm not saying it's put up or shut up time. But for a guy 5 years ago was the number two pick in the draft, Nolan, Hester Kerstad's got to be a dude. I mean, Colton Cowser's been a dude. If Hester Kerstad's not a dude this year and he's competing and it's not health-related, you know, going to get a little skeptical here. And he's a little bit on the older side as well. Oh, and by the way, let's not forget, a year ago at this time, Jackson Holliday was the number one prospect in baseball. Oh, and he's still around, too.
Yeah, I would say it is put up or shut up, at least for the Orioles end of things, the organization when it comes to Kerstad and Mayo, for that matter. I mean, these guys are aging. They're beyond your typical age range of a prospect. They're getting up there. Kerstad's 25. I mean, it's time to make a decision here. And sure, they had a crowded outfield last year, still do in some ways, but they never really gave him a chance to get his feet under him. He'd get called up, pinch hit. That's it. I mean, he didn't even get to start for a while, and then they finally started him maybe once or twice a week. He got yo-yoed up and down between AAA and here. He never, you know, you mentioned the unfortunate injury.
Yeah,
so he's
drilled him. Yeah.
He's just hasn't had a chance, a real chance, that is. And we've said it with a lot of Orioles prospects. They don't get that chance until they go elsewhere. So if you're the Orioles, either trade him for another need on your team or play him every day. Give him a chance. You can't just keep stashing this guy. He's going to turn 28, and he hasn't even played a full season.
Yeah, I'm with you. Spring training shouldn't be about if he goes 1-for-40. Let's get him in there, give him regular at-bats, and see what he can do. If he was a right-handed hitter, it would certainly help his cause a lot more, but he's not. Left-hander with power, undeniable power. Defensive skills a little shaky, let's be honest here. But they drafted him number two overall for a reason. And Mayo, he's just kind of caught in the wash right now. Kobe Mayo, because there are a lot of dudes that are him. And Ryan Mountcastle, by the way, is still in his 20s. And he's supposed to be that next level Mountcastle. I don't know yet. We'll see.
At least with Kerstad, he's not a great defensive player, but I thought he showed himself to be at least capable at times last year. And they even threw him into the deep end there in that cavernous left field at times. So I don't know if I'm going that far. Colton Cowser can certainly hold that down. Handle right field. You know, there's some intricacies over there with the cutout in the corner, but he can handle it. Mayo's just, I mean, he's a lost cause defensively.
I would say this, you know, when you look at their roster and the guys that they got, you know, excuse me?
Yeah, go ahead.
For Elias, more important for him than this last offseason signing people is going to be the trade deadline, because if his young players do what they're supposed to do and improve like they should improve, they're going to be damn good. And the trade deadline is going to be the key thing, because they're going to be a good baseball team.
It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. We'll come back. Damon Evans. We'll talk more Orioles and baseball. Mike Exisa, CBSSports.com. And Damon Evans, athletic director, University of Maryland, coming up next here on The Fan. Joining us now, as he does every Wednesday, to talk about it, he's on the Window Nation guest hotline on this Woman Crush Wednesday. Let's welcome back, as we always do, Damon Evans. Damon, what's happening?
Hey, man, we're just sitting over here in College Park getting ready for a big game tonight.
Well, you got a $10 million donation coming to the athletic program. By the way, you're welcome. But
so you're the anonymous
owner? Yeah, when it's anonymous, is it unexpected, or is it something that you maybe knew was coming down the horizon and you're just appreciative of it?
It can go both ways in these types of situations. You can have something that comes in that was unexpected, or you can have something that comes in that was expected. This was a gift we had been working on, and we knew there was a strong possibility of closing this gift out, and we were able to do so, and the donor asked to remain anonymous throughout this, so we want to respect that, but we're grateful. When you have commitments of this magnitude coming into your program, that's the type of support that we need in order to be able to compete at a high level. So the generosity of this individual is just terrific, and I can't thank them enough for what they've done for us, and we'll continue to build from this, but it's great for our basketball program, and it's great for our athletics program overall.
Now, David, speaking of the basketball program, last week when he spoke, yeah, it struggles on the road, well documented. Since then, they won two games, blew out Illinois on the road, and then won that thrilling game against Indiana on Sunday. Now they come in at home against the ranked Wisconsin team. So now all the bracketology stuff and the Ken Palms and all the rankings have Maryland pretty secure. Still 10 games left. But how much better are you feeling about the team today than when we spoke last Wednesday?
Well, you know, I've always thought we've had a good team. You could see it throughout the year. We've played extremely well at home. We've had, up until recently, some struggles on the road. But this team has always shown the ability or capability of getting it done. And when they went on the road against Illinois, which was a huge win, was very, very significant, especially getting the first one of a two-game road swing. And then, you know, to go there and beat Indiana at Indiana, which is a difficult place to play in the manner in which we did it, it just shows the hard work that Kevin has put in and the student-athletes have put in. And to make that shot by Rice to win a one-possession game, those are the types of things that continue to build your confidence as a team. So this is a team that has shown that they can win on the road, and now we're back at home. There's no easy game. There's no nights off, and here comes number, I think, 18 or Wisconsin 17. Coming in here. 17 Wisconsin coming in here, and we need to be ready, and I'm sure we will be.
8 of 9, by the way, the Badgers have put on the board. Damon Evans, athletic director, University of Maryland, joining us here, Vinny, at 81.057 The Fan. Now, Gold Rush tonight, expected to be a big crowd. Hopefully, Damon, I guess this catapults the fans to get down to College Park as the end of the season, back end of the schedule, has a lot of home games in your favor here.
Yeah, we're excited to be home. I know Kevin's excited to be home, and our team's excited to be home. The annual Gold Rush game, which is really, really big for us. We expect a big crowd here tonight for this game, and we really need their support when you're playing the number 17th ranked team. And we're just on the outside looking in of the rankings, and this is one of those games that could push us over the hump. And it's a big game from an NCAA perspective. So I just want to remind the fans that we appreciate everything that they do. And their role is very, very significant in our overall success. So we thank them for that, and I want to thank them for figuring out how to get out here and support us again in tonight's game.
Hey, Damon, when you see, like, Penn State paying $3.1 million per year to the defensive coordinator, Michigan paying Wink $2.5 million per year, the two highest paid coordinators, what do you think of where college football is heading with all these salaries?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The market is the market with regard to college football coaches and coaches across the board in general. Those individuals have positioned themselves quite well to command those types of salaries, and so deservedly so. I don't look at those things and go, what the heck is going on? I look at those and say, okay, this is the market, and this is what a really, really good coordinator costs. And so, you know, we're going to do everything that we can to make sure that we compete in that marketplace. You know, you want to pay people who are worth those salaries, and we will do the same if we're able to attract those types of individuals to the University of Maryland. So we've got to make sure that we go out, we do our due diligence and try to find those people, but we'll continue to work at it, work hard, and deal with whatever the market brings to bear.
Hey, Damon, I enjoyed watching the women's game. I'll tell you what, UCLA, they are talented. I had to text Rob Long and ask him how tall that center was from UCLA because she was unbelievable.
They really were. We had a tough stretch for our women's team. And, you know, when you have to play, start off with, think it was USC, then you go Texas, and then UCLA, I mean Ohio State. You know, that's a tough stretch. And then we had some injuries. No excuses here. But it shows you how competitive women's basketball is, how tough this league is, and I think we'll be fine. UCLA, there's a reason they're number one. There's a reason they're the only undefeated team remaining in men's or women's college basketball. They're deep at every position. They're good at every position. They can shoot it. They got inside-outside game. And so it was good to have them here. We learned a lot about our team, and I expect us to bounce back tonight against Penn State.
Damon Evans, Athletic Director, University of Maryland, joining us here. Vinny at Haiti, 105.7 The Fan on the Window Nation Hotline. Damon, lacrosse ready to face off here. You got a lot of other things happening down at College Park. Give us a heads up what's happening in Terps land.
Well, yeah, the number five men's lacrosse team, we're going to open that season this Saturday at noon versus Richmond. Always excited when lacrosse gets underway. Tillman has done a terrific job. We're celebrating the 100th season of men's lacrosse here at the University of Maryland. So I just can't wait to get out there and see those young men do their things. Wrestling is ranked number 25, and we're 3-1, and we host number 2 Iowa this Sunday at 2 p.m. That is going to be a significant match. They are very, very, very talented. Gymnastics is at Rutgers this weekend, and our tennis team was out at Texas and beat BYU, and track had a strong showing in New York. So, you know, women's lacrosse, baseball, and softball are also nearing the start of their season. So it really gets busy at this time of the year. A lot of exciting things to look forward to, and just appreciate what our coaches and our student-athletes do.
Go Rush down to College Park tonight, Maryland, Wisconsin. You hear the game on 105.7 The Fan. Damon, Woman Crush Wednesday, what are we jamming to today?
We're going to listen to a little bit of Aretha Franklin. Aretha Franklin and that song that we all know, Respect.
Respect from Aretha Franklin. Damon, appreciate it. Have fun tonight down at that basketball game. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
There's Damon Evans, everybody. It's Vinny at Haiti, 105.7 The Fan. We'll come back. Reset for you. Mike Exesa, CBSSports.com, talks baseball to him, 11 o'clock. Whip around 11:15. Then we'll start grading the Ravens. The regular season is over. We got into some rookies yesterday. We'll look at the regular players, at least those expected to come back as free agency will be looming in just a couple of months. Mike Exesa, talk Major League Baseball with him as we're just a couple of weeks away from spring training. Orioles still expected to be one of the better teams in the American League, but how does the American League East look in general as it's coming off a season in which the Yankees made the ALCS or the World Series, the Orioles made the playoffs? Other teams kind of struggled a little bit here in 2024. Who leveled up? And we'll talk about the Dodgers signing anyone in their wake trying to build upon their world championship team. Whip around left 15, talk about what happened in the world of sports last night. And then we'll break down the Ravens. Vinny's going to break down the Ravens grade-wise. Individual players here in 2024, which had 9 Pro Bowlers and won their second consecutive AFC North Division. Let's go to Ed Narbutus. Ed, what's up?
Vinny, good morning to you, gentlemen.
What's up, Ed?
How you doing, Vinny?
Good, man.
Yes, sir. Topical current sports comments. Maryland Terrapins matchup starting five, fully capable. However, quality bench minutes are needed in the event early foul trouble occurs. For the substitutes, 8 to 10 points combined, no unforced turnovers until the coach can reinsert. Ravens, proven asset addition, and Coach Chuck Pagano. KC Chiefs, one fail-safe play they lean on to move the chains, let's say 3rd and 6. They play fake left, QB sprint roll, boot waggle right, and then they form a receiver ladder tier and run to their spots for the QB choice, and he's pump faking the whole time. You have to be disciplined not to bite and run through that tackle. If not, he'll burn you as he did last Super Bowl for the winning score. Orioles, get the ace on board for time frame indoctrination courtesy. They know it's needed. Gunnar Henderson, I hope he's not a pitch around this year. They got to stay mindful to keep your best hitter protected with a feared bat on deck. And I'm curious to see who that man's going to be in the 4 and 5 spots this year. I like all sports. Love baseball.
There you go.
Firmly believe MLB needs to address salary ceilings and minimum floors expenditures in large market, small market, parity, equity. If not this year, we'll definitely rear its ugly head in the future if escalations are not reined in. On that subject, last thing, no doubt all organizations have to make a profit, must stay in the black to field a team. I get that part. What I don't get is our rooting interest team, 42 years World Series vacant. Ineptitude for that long? I don't think so. So what is it? Thank you for your courtesy, gentlemen.
All right, Ed and Arbutus, thank you very much. The early Angelos regime spent a ton of dough for a couple of years. They had the number one payroll. Major League Baseball did not field a World Championship team. Unfortunately, got close a couple of times, 96-97, making the ALCS, losing to the Yankees and then the Indians, and which was an upset at that time. But even Hal, Nolan, get in here. Hal Steinbrenner, owner of the Yankees, George Steinbrenner would have been offended by the fact that the Dodgers are going bananas. This year, this offseason, the Dodgers have spent more than $450 million guaranteed dollars picking their 2025 luxury tax payroll to $390 million. Now, last year, they paid $1 billion in salary to the two free agents last year. Steinbrenner's like, it's difficult for most of us owners to be able to do the kind of things that they're doing.
Yeah, that's rich.
We'll see if it pays off. And they were the number one team. Free agency started back after the 76 season, and they put the big splash, getting Don Gullett and Reggie Jackson, of course, among others, and continued to spend and spend and spend. And it did pay off, because they went back-to-back World Series 77-78. Then they started to build from within with the Jeters and the Ramirez's, or excuse me, the Bernie Williams and the Mariano Riveros and the Jorge Posados. But when a Steinbrenner says, hey, we're good.
It's a little ridiculous.
It speaks volumes.
I mean, I was kind of against what the Dodgers were doing, but then hearing that reaction from the Yankees, I don't know, I kind of like it. I mean, they're in the National League. They're their own thing over there. They're not the Orioles' problem unless they met in the World Series, so I don't know, spend away, I guess. But if we're being honest here, outside of an Ohtani or they were in on the Soto sweepstakes, they would have gladly taken on that money. Most of these guys they've signed here recently, the rest of the league was open to bid on them. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a lot of money for Tanner Scott, but what was stopping any of the other contenders that were seriously in on him from scooping him up?
And by the way, it's not like the Yankees haven't spent. They gave Max Fried 8 years, $218 million. So it's not like they're short on the coffers there. But they were all in on Soto. I think the Mets are another team that's willing to open that checkbook to all comers. Phillies have spent some dough. But the Dodgers, what they've done the last couple of years, and a lot of it's deferred money, is insane.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what it does. We kind of talked a couple weeks ago, maybe even a question for Xisa here in the next segment. I believe he was the one writing about it, that this could have repercussions for the next negotiations, CBA negotiations in 2026, which is crazy that we're already there. It seems like just yesterday we had the delayed start to the season, the lockout and all that. So might be going through that again.
Spending money, that's a part of reality. Baseball, they don't have a salary cap. There is no salary floor as well, which creates some problems. As we said earlier, though, David Rubenstein, nobody is going to get into the Dodgers' world in regards to spending, but the Orioles are going to have to up the ante. They have spent well over $40 million, by the way, in arbitration figures, as our boy Jorge Mateo reached a deal, avoids arbitration, didn't get the $4 million that he was asking, about $3.5 million. But there is an option year for 2026, which is a nice little caveat. So if he performs well, coming back from the Tommy John surgery, basically, on his elbow, hey, he earns it on performance. How about that?
Just good to see them not go to arbitration with any of these guys. You know, years past, they'd bicker over what's really minuscule amounts of money when we're talking about, you know, player contracts here. I mean, they would argue over thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, not even millions, with, at the time, big name players for your franchise. John Means, Trey Mancini, they took them to arbitration. So don't even deal with that stuff. It's just bad headlines when you load up the computer and you say, oh, Orioles are bickering over, you know, money with their players again. Just don't even deal with it.
Yeah, I remember Santander famously a couple of years ago, $250,000. They were haggling over now, getting almost 100 mil in Toronto. It's Vinny at Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Woman Crush Wednesday. More baseball talk coming your way. Top of the hour, Mike Exisa, CBSSports.com. Just a couple of weeks away, basically, from pitchers and catchers. Whip around left 15, what happened in the world of sports last night. And historically, we'll get into that. And then we're going to break down the Ravens. Position grades, player grades. Vinny Serrato is going to tell it like it is at 11:30.